Welcome to Tori Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perkaf Tet, Chapter 29. The last three psukim we've learned have dealt with the time period right after Galut Yehoyachin, also known as Galut HaCharashma Masker, the artisan's exile, when a large number of people of Judea were exiled to Babylonia, along with King Yehoyachin and many vessels of the Beit HaMikdash. While Yirmiyahu was trying to get his message across to the people of Israel, fight the false prophets, and try to influence Tzidkiyahu's military strategy, he has another community to think about, and that is the exiled people in Babel, who are in shock, fear, and don't know how to think about what this massive occurrence means for their future and their present. In Parak 29, which is a series of letters, Yirmiyahu engages with this Jewish community, the first community of the diaspora, and gives them guidance on how to conduct their lives in exile. To me, this is perhaps the most important perek in Yirmiyahu, and maybe even in the whole Tanakh, because without this perek, I don't think we would be here today, learning Nachyomi, studying Torah, observing mitzvot, or even identifying as Jews. Without this perek in Yirmiyahu, I think we would have assimilated and faded into nothingness, lost our identity, as did every other displaced society at the time, including the 10 tribes exiled from the northern kingdom of Yisrael. Let's think about what this community in Babel looks like. How are they thinking about things? What are they going through? Economically, they're very fearful. They're a displaced community. Remember, we're talking about an agricultural society here, and they've just lost all of their land. What are they going to do? They're captives. Are they going to be able to live? Are they going to be able to put food on their table? Politically, they're cut off from their community in Israel. They don't know if they can trust their leadership anymore. Their leaders have been telling them this would never happen. The rebellion of Yehoyachin fell apart. What's going to be with them under Babylonian rule? Are they going to be oppressed? How are they going to live? And religiously, they really need to figure things out. What does Judaism look like without a Beit HaMikdash? There'd been so much focus on it by the Judean leaders and the people, to the exclusion of all else. It was the most important religious thing that they did, was bring korbanot and go serve Hashem in the Beit HaMikdash. And now they don't have a Beit HaMikdash. What's their religious life going to be like? What does Judaism look like without Eretz Yisrael? Remember, this had never happened before. Their religion started at Yetziat Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, when they received the Torah and left Egypt, and they had 40 years wandering in the desert without having the land of Israel. But since then, they have had the land of Israel, and it was such an important part of their philosophy, of everything that they did, and even the passages in the Torah all talk about practicing their religion in the land of Israel. And now they don't have the land of Israel. What does a religion look like that's not in the land of Israel? Does Hashem still care about them? Does the fact that they were exiled mean that they are rejected and Hashem doesn't want them anymore? How does one construct a religious life living in the foreign city of Babylonia? And with all of this at the same time, they had false prophets with them in Babel. And the false prophets were saying, don't worry about any of this. The empire of Babylonia is going to fall within a few months, a year, maybe two tops. But you're going to be back to Israel, so you don't even have to think about any of these things. Don't change any aspect of your religious life or of your philosophy, or even practically, don't become invested in any life here in Babylon, because it is going to be so temporary. Yirmiyahu has to address all of these issues from his place in Eretz Yisrael, and he does it through a letter. First, he addresses their economic issues as well as a polemic against the false prophets. Yirmiyahu says in verse 5, "Binu batim vashevu, nit'u ganot v'ichlu et peryam. Build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their fruit." Pasuk Vav, verse 6, "Kechu nashim, take wives, get married, v'holidu banim u'banot, and have children, u'kechu livnechem nashim, and marry off your children, v'benotechem tenu la'anashim, marry off your daughters, teladna banim u'banot, and they will have children, u'revusham, you should multiply there, v'altimatu, and don't lessen yourselves." In dark contrast to what Yirmiyahu had been telling the Jews of Israel, where he said, you're not going to get married, you're not going to have children. The people in Babel should look to the future. They should settle in. They should build houses and live in them. They're going to plant gardens, and they will have time to enjoy the fruit of their labor. Economically, they are going to be okay. This is not going to be a bad exile. This is going to be a good exile. And while the land of Israel is going to be ravaged by war, Yirmiyahu describes here in Babylonia, ironically, a time of peace. Now, the polemic against the false prophets is clear. Yirmiyahu is telling them, you're going to have enough time to get married, have children, marry off those children, and have grandchildren. You're not leaving anytime soon. You should invest in this. You should build houses. Your community is going to grow and is going to be successful. Then he addresses their political fears. And he says in verse 7, V'tirshu et shlom ha'ir, asher higleti etchem shama. Seek out the peace of the city that I've exiled you to there. Vit palelu ba'ada el Hashem. Pray on its behalf to Hashem. Ki b'shloma yeh lachem shalom. When it has peace, you will have peace. Imagine how jarring this pasuk is to the ear of a Judean exile. Pray for the peace of the city, but the city is not Jerusalem. The city is the city of Babylon. And Yirmiyahu is saying, yes, your lot is thrown in with the Babylonians. If the Babylonian city has peace, then so do you. You can't think of yourself anymore as living in Jerusalem. You have to think of yourself as Babylonian citizens, and therefore pray for your host country. This does address their political fears, because he's focusing on the word. If you notice, the word that's repeated three times in this pasuk is the word shalom. Peace, as opposed to the way we've been hearing the word peace throughout the whole Sefer, are those Jews that say, shalom, shalom, there will be peace, there will be peace. And Yirmiyahu responds, ve'ein shalom. No, there will not be peace. Here, the people of Babylon, they will have peace, and they will be Babylonian citizens. Then he addresses the issue of, does being exiled mean that Hashem has rejected us and cut us off from his care? Yirmiyahu says in verse 10, Ki ko amar Hashem, ki lefi mal'ot lebavel shiv'im shana efkod etchem, v'akimoti aleichem et devarai hatov, lashiv etchem el hamakom hazeh. When 70 years is filled for Babel, when the Babylonian Empire lasts for 70 years, I will take you back to my land. I will keep my promise to you to bring you back to this place. And then he continues in verse 11, Ke'anochi adati et ha-machshavot asher anochi choshev aleichem nu Hashem. I know my thoughts are machshavot shalom, v'lo l'ra'ah, latet lachem achrit v'tikva. I have only positive thoughts to you to give you a future, to give you hope. This is not Hashem being bad to you and rejecting you. Rather, this is Hashem changing you. And this is going to be the future of the Jewish people, will be through you. Remember, Yechezkel saw Hashem's chariot moving to Israel at this time. Hashem is with you in the Galut. He has not rejected you. Finally, Yirmiyahu addresses the main question, the religious question. What does it mean to be a Jew in the diaspora? How can one have a religious life without the Beit HaMikdash? How can one have a religious life without Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel? And this he addresses in Psukim Yud Bet and Yud Gimel, verses 12 and 13. Says Yirmiyahu, Ukratem oti v'halachtem, v'hitpalaltem ilai, v'shamati aleichem. If you call to me, then you'll come back, you'll go. V'hitpalaltem ilai, if you pray to me, I will hear you. Then in verse 13, ubikashtem oti, if you seek me out, umatzatem, you will find me. Ki tidrashuni b'chol levavchem, only if you seek me out with your entire heart. Notice in these psukim how many words there are for something that is so key in our lives, and that is prayer. The word kratem, you'll call to me. V'hitpalaltem, you'll pray to me. Ubikashtem oti, and you'll seek me out, and ki tidrashuni, if you seek me out with your entire heart. What Yirmiyahu is saying is, there's another way to reach Hashem that doesn't have anything to do with Korbanot or with the Beit HaMikdash or even with the land of Israel. And that is prayer. Now, prayer has been around all of this time. Hannah prayed. We know that various people throughout Tanakh have prayed, but it hasn't been institutionalized or formalized until now. What Yirmiyahu is saying here is that you can replace the korbanot with prayer. You can seek Hashem out and connect to Him directly. You never needed a Beit HaMikdash to connect with Hashem. And what Yirmiyahu is doing is fascinating because he's teaching these Jews of the diaspora a new way of connecting that doesn't involve anything physical. It was the physical objects, the Beit HaMikdash, the Korbanot, that messed them up. And what he's saying now is you don't need vicarious connection. You don't need to connect to Hashem through the Korbanot or through the Beit HaMikdash. You could connect to Hashem through speaking to Him, through calling to Him, through seeking Him. But it's going to be more difficult. You'll have to seek Him out with your whole heart. You'll have to look for Him. It's not going to be as obvious as it is going into the Beit HaMikdash and seeing a miracle. You won't have the visceral experience of putting your hand onto the animal, the korban, and giving over that animal to Hashem as if you were giving yourself. That you don't have. But you have something else, and what you have will never leave you. And that is your connection with Hashem. That's always there. And maybe the people in Israel forgot this. And that's why they had to see that they can be religious. They can be Jewish. They can have a connection with Hashem without the temple. Because the temple was never necessary for them to connect. It was an aid. The korbanot, the sacrifices, were never necessary. It was an aid. But the religion goes way beyond that, to the core ideals of the religion, and that is Hashem and the Torah, and that you still have. And what Yirmiyahu is doing, just realize how revolutionary this is, how there could be people in Yirmiyahu's own time that would say, he's not religious. How could he do this? Just throw out the korbanot, throw out the Beit HaMikdash, as if they never existed. And that's not what Yirmiyahu is doing, but he is saying that there is another way, and you need to correct what you had before. He reiterates that they will return to Eretz Yisrael. The goal is always to go back and have those physical objects that connected you so quickly and intimately with Hashem. But this time, it will be different because you will be different. You will deserve the Beit HaMikdash because you will have been trained in the exile how to use it. You will deserve the land of Israel because you will know that you have to be worthy of it to stay there with your actions. You will treat the korbanot as a type of tefillah, as a kind of prayer, and not just a physical act that you can hide your physical deeds with as they were doing. And with that, Yirmiyahu has just shifted Judaism from a religion that is stuck in only one space and time to one that is flexible and can deal with changes to the situation that the nation is in. He has focused the Jews on what is core to the religion, namely Hashem and the Torah, that will never leave them. Through the ups and downs of our history, Jews have been able to hold on to these core elements of our faith even when we didn't have anything else. This is what helped us survive the destruction of the Second Temple and the terrible diaspora that followed, the wanderings of the Jews from country to country during the Middle Ages as they get kicked out of place after place, the Crusades, the pogroms, and ultimately allowed us to have a community today that has a diaspora that has not lost their Jewish soul. Yirmiyahu is the one who allowed us today to be learning Nach Yomi. Without this perek, we would have given up. We would have figured that without a Beit HaMikdash, the religion doesn't mean anything anymore. We can't connect to Hashem anyway. And then we would have intermarried, lost our identity, and lost what it means to be the people of God. What happens in the second part of the parak is fascinating as well. The false prophets do not take this letter lying down. They must, for the sake of their lies, push back against Yirmiyahu's view that this galut is long and that it's going to last. Remember, they were prophesying that the Babylonian Empire was going to fall any day. A false prophet named Shmaya HaNechelami writes a letter back to Jerusalem addressed to Tzfanya ben Maasiah, the Kohen who we met back in Parak 21, who asked Yirmiyahu to daven for the war effort. And he addresses his letter to him and the people of Jerusalem, telling them, Hashem nitancha kohen tachat Yehoyada ha-kohen liut pikidim beit Hashem. Hashem appointed you, Tzfanya, to be in charge of the Beit HaMikdash. L'chol ish mishuga mitnabei? You let any crazy person just walk into the Beit HaMikdash and give prophecy? No. You're supposed to put them in. Remember the mehapechet that Pashhor put Yirmiyahu in, that torture chamber? That's what you do to crazy people who come and give prophecy in the Beit HaMikdash. Va'ata lama lo ga'arta b'Yirmiyahu ha'anatoti ha'mitnaveh lachem. And he says in verse 27, why haven't you yelled at, why haven't you disciplined Yirmiyahu from Anatot, who comes and gives this crazy prophecy in the Beit HaMikdash, saying that the Galut is going to be long and we should settle down? Yirmiyahu writes another letter back, specifically calling out Shmaya HaNechelami. Notice his name is Shmaya the Dreamer. That was a kind of false prophet that Yirmiyahu spoke about in chapter 23, the ones who dream, and two other false prophets, saying that they will get individual punishments, as did Hananiah ben Azor. And he ends the parak the same way he did to Hananiah ben Azor in parak Kavchet, chapter 28, Kisara Diber Al Hashem, because they've spoke disloyally against Hashem. This passage comes straight from Devarim Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13, about the passage where we read about the false prophets. And Yirmiyahu is identifying these people with false prophets that the Torah has warned us about. Yirmiyahu hopes that this community in Babel can be the ones to lead the way. When the next group of exiles is sent from Jerusalem, ravaged after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, they will find that not only has religious life been set up for them in Babel, but a new type of religious thought has been developed. It's not really new. It was always true. It was always there, but it was underdeveloped. Now, we understand why the community in Babel are the basket of good figs. It's because this community will lead the way to a robust Judaism that will survive for centuries and centuries after Yirmiyahu is gone, and we are their descendants and their beneficiaries. Thank you for studying together Le'ilo Nishma, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.